The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball, raised in front of a computer screen, raised for covering the game, raised by wolves. Now talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James, here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
Custer, crossover, kicks it. Towns, for three! Yes! Marcus Towns!
What a great shot by Towns. That's all we do is talk about great shots by Towns on this podcast,
right? Anyone named Towns that hits a big shot, we will give you run on this show.
That was a different Towns, and me and Derek are actually just taping this. We just started this minutes after Loyola Chicago knocked out Nevada.
We've basically been hanging out for the last hour watching that game and then following the Hornets Grizzlies abomination.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a little bit, too. But we are the Raised by Wolves podcast. We are brought to you by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand, official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. I'm Manny Hill. You are also hearing the voice of Derek James, and so we'll talk about that real quickly here, the NCAA tournament, because it's crazy. I know you haven't gotten a chance to watch a whole lot of the tournament yet.
It's been kind of tough to find time to watch the basketball that I'm supposed to watch for my job, but I do because it's my job, and it's fun too. But no, it's kind of been a bummer to miss out on a fun tournament. There have been some years, I think, when they expanded to the don't call it a playing game, playing games.
Yeah.
That it kind of soured it a little bit for me, but I feel like the last couple of years have been a lot of fun, and this year has been no exception, especially with the wild first weekend.
Yeah. Loyola Chicago, you just heard in that highlight there. They knock out Nevada 69-68 in the Sweet 16, so they're going on to the Elite Eight. An 11 seed, Loyola Chicago. I mean, it's what a ride for them. I'm still, and I told you this before we started today, I'm still a little bitter at them because they knocked my Vols out in the round of 32
but
last weekend.
Finish, but I mean, 1.8 seconds after Nevada hits the three to come within, what, four? And then they realize, oh, crap, we still have a foul to give.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is not ideal.
Yeah. But, Marcus Towns hits the shot that ends up clinching it for them. So they're on to the Elite Eight, and they're going to play either Kentucky or Kansas State. I think that's how the brackets work out off the top of my head. But, congratulations to them. Sister Jean, who did her own bracket and didn't even pick them to –
she had them losing.
She had them losing this game in the Sweet 16. So, it is a cool story. I've been kind of having fun with being – semi-bitter at them, but I'm not really. I mean, it's cool. We always like seeing those lower seeds sort of advance. That George Mason run in 06 was awesome. That was a lot of fun. Okay, so let's talk. We will get to the Wolves here, but we got to talk.
There are more fun things right now.
Yes, we have to talk.
And things to make fun of.
Grizzlies Hornets tonight, because we're sitting here. We're watching the college basketball game. We're watching Michigan blow out A&M, and we're watching the Loyola Chicago game, and we're following on our phones and our laptops the Grizzlies and Hornets. What was the final score? 140-79. Hornets not.
Manny, what's 140 minus 79?
61.
I think it's 61. That's a lot to lose by. Turns out the NBA record is 68.
Oof! Wow. Okay, so we know the Grizzlies. This has been an awful year for the Grizzlies. They've had some injuries. They fired Fizz early in the season.
Conley's been out.
Yeah, Conley's been out. Gasol's been out.
Has the plague or something.
So we know it's been a bad year, and it's probably time for them to, you know, not like blow the whole thing up, but You have Gasol and you have Conley, so it's, you know, you've got guys who are, you know, in their 30s now, but they're still really good players. And if you can add like a young talented high lottery pick to that mix, then, you know, you might have something. But
I think Matt Moore brought up a really good point, formerly CBS Sports and now Action Network. He was talking about this on his pod, I think, how the Grizzlies kind of need to sit down with Gasol and say, okay, what do you want?
Yeah.
I mean, he's a big part of that community. He went to high school in Memphis. We've talked about that before. And just really figure out, you know, if he's willing to, you know, tough it out and kind of see where it goes, or if he really, if he wants to be put in a better situation, because it's really lean right now. And, you know, they're not putting themselves in the best position to win, clearly. But this was something. I mean, this is really the most fun plus minus game I could think of. Jeremy Lamb was a plus 51 for the Hornets.
In 26 minutes.
26 minutes. Jeremy Lamb.
Yeah.
Well, Kemba plus 47.
Who was it that somebody tweeted at you too, like, finally after all these years, the James Harden
trade
has been justified?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and there was at one point in the game, Wayne Selden was a minus 38 in 15 minutes.
He finishes a negative 36 in 21 minutes. So I don't think he's calling his mom after this one.
Yeah. Well, at least he picked up a little bit of ground in the final 6 minutes that he played. But yeah, I mean, that's, I kind of feel for JB Bickerstaff, who's been the interim coach, who's been an interim coach at multiple stops.
Houston, too, right? After McHale was fired? Houston.
Yeah, in Houston. I was thinking here.
So was I for a second.
Yeah, but no, yeah, you're right, in Houston. I mean, and JB's always been kind of a guy that I've hoped would get a coach, get like
Jarrell an Martin actual, minus 44 and 32.
Oh, my goodness. But JB's a guy, I mean, you know, JB's a former Gopher, and he's just a nice guy, and you know, and I think he's you know, he's still sort of waiting for that opportunity of actually like getting a head coaching job and not just being an interim guy for someone who gets fired. So I kind of feel for him a little bit, but, you know, I get the sense he kind of understands what's going on there, that they're trying to sort of start over without having to really like blow the entire thing up.
Yeah, and I don't know how much the Grizzlies are going to look at this end of the season and go, all right, JB, time to evaluate your performance and how the team performed under you as coach. Because, I mean, given the circumstances, I don't think there's any way that you can hold this against JB Bickerstaff.
Right.
And I think you just have to decide, is this the guy we want to coach whatever the next era of the Grizzlies and what that looks like?
Yeah, so they're going to be an interesting team to watch. I mean, they're going to have some decisions to make with their future. I mean, they're going to have a high lottery pick, and then you've got these two star players who are really good. We're a little bit older, but they're still really good, and you got to figure out, you know, they're making a lot of money. They're both under pretty hefty contracts, and
Mike Conley was the highest paid player in the league until last summer.
Yeah, yeah. And so they got some decisions to make, so we'll see how it goes with them. Okay, the Wolves. 5-5 since the Jimmy Butler trade, or the Jimmy Butler injury, I should say, not the Butler trade. What do you think? I mean, this seems to me like this was about what I figured they would be, sort of a 500 team. In, you know, over the course of the time that Jimmy's been out. Mm-hmm. And so they're sitting there at 5-5 since the injury. Teague's played really well. We've seen Wiggins sort of pick things up a little bit. And they've needed it. And when you have an injury like that, a guy who's been like everything for you, you usually think that it's going to just sort of fall apart. But you know, they're hanging around, and they're probably going to make the playoffs.
Towns has gone supernova.
Yo, he's been terrific. He's been fantastic, and he's been everything that you'd want him to be. And
if you wanted to get a read on where Towns is as far as his progression, you know, into NBA stardom, the numbers he's put up, these 30-16 games where he goes like 8-for-12 or 12-for-16 are just incredible.
The efficiency is off the charts.
And you can start counting on that every single night now. And it's a lot of fun to see. And I think they had that, I forget which game it was, where they actually went to him in the fourth quarter and it worked.
Yes.
Which, wow.
Yes.
Yeah, how did I forget that? But I think one thing that's really helped them too, teams like the Nuggets and the Clippers kind of fallen off. The Jazz have been red hot. I wrote about this for today on 1500ESPN.com. They're like 21-4 in their last three games. They actually lost to the Grizzlies on Sunday.
That's unreal.
Which probably spawned the Grizzlies to go on to be upset about that tonight or Thursday night.
wait a minute. We're not supposed to beat a playoff team. We've got to fix that right now. Now let's lose by 61.
But now, I mean, where the Wolves are, according to Basketball Reference, as of yesterday afternoon, I haven't checked today, they had a 95.3% chance to make the playoffs.
Okay.
With two more games against Denver, one more against Utah. Utah has to outright pass them, which I think is going to be kind of difficult considering how difficult Golden State's schedule gets.
Yeah.
Because the Jazz have this run where they play Golden State, Boston, the Lakers, who aren't great, but they're pesky, and they get the Blazers. I mean, that's a lot of tough teams. And also the Spurs are in that mix, too. And it's going to be tough for Utah, I think, to really make up that ground. And the Jazz right now are 6-6 in the division. The Wolves are 9-4. The Jazz have two division games left. So even if the Jazz wind up tying the season series, there's not going to be much that they can do other than hope that they can rally to pass the Wolves and hope that the Wolves fall back.
And what'd you say, the Jazz were 21-4 in the last 25 games?
21-4 in the last 24.
Oh,
21-3, excuse me.
21-3, okay, gotcha.
It probably is 21-4, though.
Yeah, but they, I mean, that can't, I mean, they've been great. It's been a terrific stretch for them, but that, is that going to be sustainable? See, they're 40-31, so they got 11 games left. Is that sort of win percentage of that clip going to, is that sustainable over the next 10 games? Possibly, but I don't. I mean, they've already had 25, like, terrific. They've already had a stretch of 25 games where they've been terrific, and I can't imagine it's going to be something that's going to continue into, like, 30 games or so.
Well, no, they lost to Atlanta on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and of course, I mean, you play that well, and you're bound to slip up one night and have a dumb loss.
Mm-hmm.
We saw it with the Warriors, even when they won 73 games. They lost some night in Philly, and then, like, 6 days later in Milwaukee. Like, it just happens. It's really hard to sustain that over a long period of time. And then you have, I mean, you do want to, you know, be playing as well as possible heading into those big games they have coming up. But I don't see how they can sustain that.
Yeah. I think they're probably going to hang on. I mean, they're a game and a half up on Denver for that eighth spot.
I think the Nuggets are cooked. They're not eliminated officially, but I think the Nuggets and the Clippers are all but done for.
And the Nuggets are really bad on the road. The Nuggets have been really bad on the road this year. 12-23 on the road. I mean, but those, I mean, that if there was a team that I was a little bit worried about if the Wolves were going to somehow miss the playoffs, mm-hmm. it was Denver, just because, you know, they're going to play them twice in the last four games coming up here in a few weeks. And, you know, they just seemed like they sort of have, if there's a team that's not in the playoffs right now that could sneak in, it would be Denver. Cause I'm not sure the Clippers are, I mean, I think what the Clippers have done to this point has been really impressive.
The Clippers have no tiebreakers.
Yeah,
at
but
all.
They have no tiebreakers, and I think they've kind of overachieved a little bit. And I love DJ.
They have overachieved, and I don't mean this to be disrespectful to the Clippers. For all the Clippers fans that are most definitely listening to a Timberwolves podcast, they've beaten up on a really terrible division. You have it up. What's their division record right now?
Their division record is 11-3.
Yeah. I mean, those losses are probably to the Warriors, and maybe they slipped up against the Lakers one night.
Yeah.
I mean, their division, it's kind of a joke.
Sacramento, Phoenix.
Those are pretty much 8 guaranteed wins there for a decent team.
Yeah.
Especially in that close proximity. Let me pull this Denver thing up. Let's see. I know this is always the best podcasting when...
Well, that's why it's a podcast.
Yeah. Let's see. Here we go.
Denver's got a pretty tough stretch, though, too.
So right? Matt Moore replied to me when I tweeted out my article today. It's safe to say Denver's going to lose at least 4 more games with a magic number of 9. That can go to 8 if the Wolves win one more game of the 2 left versus Denver. Wolves can go 4-7 and get in. So the Wolves can pretty much face plant. Basically, they just can't lose out. It's pretty much it.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think when you look at where they are, so they're sitting in the 7th spot. They'd play Golden State if the playoffs started today. And I mean, let's be real here. I mean,
I did actually rank their possible playoff opponents.
Yeah,
and
because that's kind of what I want to get into is like, because it sounds like, I mean, it it looks like they're going to get in, which is good. But now I think it comes down to who do you want to play in the first round? Because you almost certainly want to avoid Houston or Golden State.
I think you do want to try to get to five. I know that the Thunder have figured their stuff out. They haven't played the Thunder since December 1st, when the Thunder were 9-12, and they've gone 43-30 since then. So 34-18 since the last time they met. They figured it out. Paul George has come along. Russell Westbrook is back.
December 1st? That was the last time they played Oklahoma City?
Yeah. That was a long time.
So they played them four times. Three. I knew they played them a lot early.
Just three games.
Was it just three?
Yeah.
I thought it was four.
Three. I don't know why it was three, but it's three.
Okay. But that's, wow.
So, I mean, that's kind of my first choice. And I think they did win an OKC.
Yeah, the Wiggins game winner.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they did win in Oklahoma City. It's not easy to win in Oklahoma City, especially in the playoffs. But they just can't go to Portland. They're 12-46 all time in Portland. They haven't played well there this year.
Well, what is it, like 2-1? They've only won there twice in like their last like 25 games in Portland or something like. They're like 2-23 or 2-22 in their last.
So basically, your best case scenario is to kill yourself, to steal a game in Portland, sweep at home, and then get beat up by the Rockets or the Warriors. I mean, just to give everything you got just to get out of the first round to, you know, have that inevitable fate to the Warriors and the Rockets. And hey, after everything that this franchise has been through for 13 years, people wouldn't be upset about that. But Portland, it's not ideal. I mean, falling from three was definitely not ideal. But,
and you got to figure, if they are matched up with Portland, you got to figure you're probably, if you're going to win that series, you're probably going to have to win in Portland twice, right? Because Portland figures to probably win one game in Target Center.
Damian Lillard is, he's such a great player. I hate watching him in crunch time because you just get so anxious, like, uh-oh, here he goes.
Because
he can sleepwalk through three quarters or not be able to find the bottom of the net, but then the last 8 minutes will come and the game will be like within 12. And Lillard will just start hitting shots out of nowhere. I don't know how many times we've seen it. He just has a knack for that kind of thing. And that's what concerns me. I mean, you kind of do take your chances on the Blazers. And actually, some people do think that's more favorable than playing the Thunder. But it's certainly, I mean, it's definitely more favorable than playing the Warriors or the Rockets. Especially the Warriors actually get healthy because they have so many bodies down right now.
Yeah. I would love a matchup with New Orleans in the first round. If the Wolves could somehow, because that's the thing, like Portland's probably, I mean, Oklahoma City's only two games back, but Portland's probably going to end up getting the three seed.
I think they're the three.
They're probably locked into that three spot. So now you're talking 4-7 or 4-8 if you want to include Utah too. You're talking 4-7 separated by two games. Or 4-8 separated by two games right now. I mean, it's conceivable that New Orleans could end up in the four spot because they're only a half game behind Oklahoma City right now. And then if you're the Wolves, you can maybe sneak up to that fifth spot.
But you have to outright pass San Antonio because they don't have the tiebreaker. So they would have to just leapfrog them outright.
Yeah, but I think New Orleans would be a really favorable matchup for the Wolves. They've played New Orleans really well this year. And, you know, and I'll take my chances with Oklahoma City. But Portland is just, I know on, like, you look at it on paper, and it feels like Portland would be a good matchup for the Wolves. That's, because Portland doesn't really have anybody that can handle Towns. Mm-hmm. But it's just that place, Moda Center's never been a kind building for the Wolves. Never. Like, I just.
You can slap whatever name you want on that building. And the Wolves are not winning there.
Moda Center, Rose Garden, whatever. Call it whatever you want. Yeah, it's always been kind of a death trap for the Wolves. Even back in like the flipping KG days, like the one series they had up there where
Scottie Pippen was incredible at 35 years old. 36.
Yeah, and I remember that series, I think a couple of games, like those first two games in Portland, like the Wolves led for the entire basically 45 minutes of both of those first two games in Portland, and Portland still ended up winning the game. both times. Like, it's just, that place is just, it's like a house of horrors for the Wolves, man.
Well, I mean, the Wolves were kind of, I think, then banking on Kevin Garnett to hopefully just take over and just lead them there. But what I think they ran into is a smart veteran team with enough young talent. Rasheed Wallace was pretty young.
Yeah.
Damon Stoudemire was still in his prime. But they had Scottie Pippen. They had Steve Smith. I mean, those teams
were... Wells was still there. Yeah. I think that...
Was Brian Grant on those teams?
I might have been.
I loved Brian Grant.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were just so balanced in experience. I think that was too tough. And I mean, I don't know that they're more balanced now, certainly. But Lillard and McCollum in that backcourt are just... They're scary.
Yeah, and right now, I mean, you're probably, I mean, aside from three-point shooting, what's the biggest weakness of this team right now? It's probably perimeter defense, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what concerns me about
it. And if you've got two flamethrowers in Portland's backcourt like Dame and CJ, like...
You just hope they miss shots four times, you know, for four games? I mean, that's kind of tough for me.
That's, honestly, that's how Houston beat them the other night and stopped their winning streak was because... I think Dame and CJ combined to be like 0 for 12 from three or something. And
that happens all the time. You can rely on that night in, night out.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, it looks like the Wolves are going to get in. And, I mean, that's – it's a good thing, and it's what they need. I mean, how – so going forward, let's talk about Derrick Rose for a second here because you and I have both been on the same page on – from the moment they signed him, that it was just, ugh, you know, type of thing where it's just don't like the move at all. But, I mean, credit where credit's due. I mean, he's the last couple of games, he's been better. I mean, the Houston game that they lost, I mean, he was bad defensively, but he helped get them back into that game. I don't know what this really means going forward. I mean, what do you think? Can this be sustained? I don't know.
I mean, I'm skeptical when anyone has one skeptical when anyone has one good quarter versus 6 years of poor play. And I mean, a lot of that's not necessarily his fault due to the injury, all his injuries trouble. I mean, he's right now day to day with an ankle injury as it is, and I guess that's been a problem going back to high school anyway. So the Houston game, he had 14 points, 6 for 11 shooting, and 3 assists in 19 minutes. You would take that off the bench. I mean, especially if you're going to use him as a combo guard. That's decent production. What bothered me was there was this series of consecutive possessions where Rose had, he missed a jumper, got a layup, turned it over, took another bad mid-range jumper, but then got another layup. And he finished 6 for 7 on shots inside the paint, but was 0 for 4 on shots away from the rim. So actually, away from the rim, he was 0 for 4 versus 6 for 7. So he doesn't have a lot of range, but he's still showing that he can. If he gets inside with a head of steam, he can still do some damage.
And it looks like he's still got a little bit of bounce. You know, like
think of how much he started with, though.
Yeah.
And how much it takes to lose that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I don't know what to think. I tend to lean towards it's not going to be sustainable and there's going to be more sort of, I guess, bad nights than good nights. But I think just the trouble that they're going to have. Well, basically right now, he and Jamal come off the bench and they both kind of do the same thing. They do it differently.
That's my problem.
They do it differently, but,
They're looking to call their own number.
Right. And Derek gets to the rim more, and Jamal's more of a, he'll hit some outside shots, but he's more kind of in the mid-range creator type of thing. But they're both brought in to just score buckets for you, and neither one of them are going to give you a lot defensively right now. And I just wonder if that is long-term as they get down the stretch of the season here with 10 games left and, probably get into the playoffs is if that's going to be sustainable for both of them, because they're going to need both of them to have good productive nights off the bench. And if they both have off shooting nights, then where's that bench production going to come from?
Right, especially with Bielitsa in the starting lineup. And yeah. if you're putting Rose and Jamal Crawford out there, are you really going to put Tyus Jones out there? So you're really, I mean, Tyus Jones isn't going to give you a lot offensively. I mean, that's just not his game. It's just not to take over games.
Mm-hmm.
So where is that coming from is actually a really great question. And there aren't a lot of clear answers to that right now. I think one thing I've noticed with Wolves fans is, you know, this fan base is dying to see the team make the playoffs. And I think that's going to mean having to see Derrick Rose succeed, whether or not you like him. And I know a lot of people don't. I think that's really a tough thing for people to reconcile. I mean, my own feelings are people who know me on Twitter know how I feel about Derrick Rose and all that, but mm-hmm. that doesn't matter because that's not my job.
And people who have listened to the ride with Royce, you know that, you know my feelings on, which are about the same, pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Right in line with your feelings too.
And it's kind of a tough spot for fans to be in to be like, well, I want to see my team succeed, but that's going to mean having Derrick Rose succeed. And I mean, it worked. He's given them boosts at times and got them back in games. I mean, that Houston comeback, I mean, he was a big part of that. It's really hard to take credit away from him. And I mean, you could look at the Gorgui Dieng. This has been a weird week in the NBA, by the way. Not only this Hornets Grizzlies games, the Gorgui, Chris Paul, Gerald Green kerfuffle, and then Kawhi Leonard stuff that came out today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but the Houston game was a lot of fun. I mean, people got into it, and they were, you know, dead asleep.
Target Center was rocking in the fourth quarter, man.
After the 8-minute mark, as soon as Gerald Green checked Gorgui Dieng.
Mm-hmm. Changed everything.
You know what, though? I do like, we've talked about this before, how this team does not have that physical presence or really that toughness. You know, when someone's, you know, trying to push your buttons and get under your skin like Chris Paul does so well, great player, but mm-hmm. an all-time pest. And Gorgui just had enough. And Chris Paul sold it a little bit, but got Gerald Green to react too and take Gerald Green out of the game, who was playing well. Like, that changes the game. And clearly that momentum swung in the Wolves' favor, and Gorgui got Gorgui chance. Like, how often does that ever happen?
Yeah, with Gorgui too, I want to see him. I want to see more from him, and I feel like the only way we're going to see more from him is if he plays more. We talked about this weeks ago. Like, Gorgui plays well when he plays more.
Same with Bielitsa.
Yeah, and I know it's I know Tibbs can kind of get reactionary where if Gorgui has a couple bad possessions or makes a mistake here or there, he'll kind of yank him out of the game and then.
But he'll have one or two bad possessions, and sometimes they're in a row. But then he's smooth sailing from there.
Yeah, but I feel like he'll make a couple bad plays and Tibbs will pull him out of the game, and then the next thing you know, you look at the box score and Gorgui played 12 minutes, and it's like
Taj would love to give him like 8 minutes, 6 to 8 minutes.
Yeah, I mean it. To me, because Gorgui can play both front court, both the four and the five, it's like I just feel like there's got to be a little bit more of a balance in terms of, you know, there might be times where you can have Gorgui and Taj sort of overlap and be on the floor at the same time. It's not
or at least try
ideal
it.
Offensively, but
or
I mean,
probably defensively.
Yeah,
that's kind of a weird pairing.
Yeah, but it's like I think. More than anything, because we know Gorgie's capable of being productive for you. And Taj is playing a career high in minutes, and he's 32 years old, and he is, if you're going to make any noise in the playoffs, Taj is vital for you. Like, you need to have him, and you cannot afford to have Taj, like, out of gas and just not being as good because he's played so much and he's worn out by the time you get,
of course,
by the time
there's
you get to April.
But Taj is right up there on the list of guys who you don't want to see go down because the Wolves will be doomed.
Yeah.
No question.
And look, I mean, Gorgui's making, what's he making this year, 15?
15-ish.
15 and a half, something like that. So play him. Play him 20, 24, 25 minutes a night. Find a way to make that work. Because, you can't. You can't have a guy that you're paying that much. Like, I don't understand how a guy who was your starting power forward all last year, and you gave him a big extension last year, and he had a good year last year for you. I don't understand how just suddenly he's just like a 14, 15 minute per game guy off your bench that just kind of spells your starting center. Like, I've always felt like an ideal role for Gorgie would be sort of the first big off the bench. Mm-hmm. But I didn't expect him to be just playing 14, 15 minutes. I thought it would still be in the 20s, you know, the low to mid 20s as far as just how much time he'll be on the floor. So.
Right. And I mean, I think I might have mentioned this last week, but what are they going to do if they have to match an offer for Bielitsa and restricted free agency, and then Justin Patton comes back into the fold? Who's the odd man out there? I mean, if you're a team that's going to be that cap pressed, especially with extensions coming to Towns and hopefully Jimmy, what are you going to do? Like, you have to try to move that contract, and no one wants it as it is, and you're not playing him, and he's struggling because he's not playing enough.
Right. I mean, you got to play. If anything, if you're planning on trying to move Gorgie down the line, you know, maybe this summer or
they're kind of killing the market for their own assets.
Yeah, I mean, just play him more and see if, you know, let him get more production, and then let him turn some heads and say, "Oh, okay, yeah, contract's a little steep, but he's a productive player. Let's, you know, we'll give up something for him."
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Just my two cents. Just my thought.
That's why we're here.
Play a little bit more.
We want your thoughts, Manny. It'd be very boring listening to me talking to myself.
Very quickly before we get out of here, we gotta give some props to Jeff Teague, man.
I thought your props to Dwight Howard.
Oh, yeah.
32 and 30.
Yeah, first 30-30 game since Kevin Love in 2010, which, if I'm not mistaken, and I said this on the ride today, and I think I'm right, that Kevin Love 30-30 game was not on TV, correct? I don't remember that game being on TV.
I believe so. I think I had to stream it, and I got the Knicks feed or something.
Yeah, because I think it at least it wasn't on TV locally here. It might have been on TV in New York.
Yes, because they're the Knicks.
But I don't.
Beasley also had
remember.
Like 40 in that game or something? 38 or something?
What's that?
I think Beasley had like 38 or 44 or something.
Well, see, now I got to look it up.
Yeah, I mean, it was quite the game because I remember after that, you know, like my fledgling NBA writer career, look at that, like, wow, Love is going off and Beasley is going off. What a game. Here we go.
November 12th, 2010. Let's see. Beasley at 35.
35, okay.
Wesley Johnson at 15. And was a plus 15.
Both of those are more impressive than anything Love or Beasley did.
So, let's see. Kevin
Darko
was...
Telly. Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Sundiata Gaines.
Oh, my gosh. Tolliver. I forgot he played for the Wolves. Sundiata Gaines.
Pat Costa, Lazar Hayward. Manny, this is exactly how our basketball reference deep dives start. And we're taping.
Yeah, we're actually taping this podcast. Yeah, if you're listening, this is what me and Derek typically do. Like, after we're done taping, we go down this rabbit hole of, like, basketball reference stuff.
And it usually starts with who we play for and then goes from there.
And the next thing you know, we're looking at, like, the 1997 Charlotte Hornets and just, like, going up and down the roster and saying, oh, yeah, I remember that guy. No, but Kevin Love, 11 of 26, 31 points, 31 rebounds, 5 assists, 12 offensive rebounds. Wow. So, yeah, Dwight Howard, 32 and 30 last night or the other night.
And then he gets suspended for getting his 16 technical.
Yeah. That's
Is
so
that the most Dwight thing of all time?
That is so Dwight Howard. That is so Dwight Howard.
He does something great, and then finds a way to shoot himself in the foot. It's so Dwight.
Yeah, it's crazy. But
Jeff Teague.
Yes, Jeff Teague. He's been fantastic, and it's time. Like, Wolves fans who were all bitter about the Ricky trade and all that, and been sour on Jeff Teague, it's time to start giving this guy some props. Like, he's been really good, and I went over the numbers with Reavers the other day. In the 10 games since the Butler injury, it's like 17.8 points, 7 assists, like 4 rebounds.
41% from 3.
Yeah, 46% from the floor. Like, he's been good, and it's time to really start giving him some credit, because with the Butler injury, if they didn't have his production, they'd be in real trouble right now.
So, they'd probably be in the Clippers spot.
Yeah.
And I was talking to Bo Cherney on Twitter, who's a Hawks guy, covered the Hawks, was in the locker room with Robbie Calland when he was with Hawks Hoop. And he was talking about, you know, Jeff definitely knows. He agreed to be like, when Jeff Teague's aggressive and locked in, he is definitely one of the better point guards in the NBA. as frustrating as he can be, but when he's locked in and when he takes it upon himself to step up, and of course, you know, the problem with that is, you know, we need to talk about when he steps up. Like, that's right. An issue. But when he's locked
in, very fine line.
He's a fantastic player when yes. he's engaged and going. And it's one of those, someone's asked, you know, well, do you think, you know, he hears it? Oh, he definitely hears it. He knows.
Yeah.
And Bo was like, well, it just depends on how much he cares. And like, you look at how chippy Teague has been with Rubio.
Yeah.
How chippy the
he
Butler.
Knows.
Oh, yeah. I asked him on media day, and I've told this several times before. You know, I was like, you know, a lot of fans, you know, are upset about Ricky Rubio, and it's going to be tough for anyone. You know, what are fans like about Jeff Teague? He goes, oh, I know. I hear it every single day. And that was in September. So he's well aware of it. I mean, I'm sure, you know, when he's had his bad nights, he hears even more of it. And that's got to be frustrating. And I think, too, part of the reason why Jimmy got so defensive on opening night or the home opener night when Rubio tried to come into the locker room, you know, and Jimmy was like, yeah, this is my locker room and this or that. I think, you know, like, these guys have Teague's back.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. I mean, well, at least, you know, it's easier probably for Jimmy, who wasn't here last year, who never played with Rubio, where they don't really have that relationship that guys, you know, like Towns or Wiggins do.
Yeah. And I mean, and Jeff's been really, and you look at the numbers overall, he's having a really good year. Like it's the overall, yeah, he's had a couple of clunkers. The game in Atlanta was just,
you can
probably his worst game of the year, but overall he's been good.
And here's the thing. You can still love Ricky Rubio. You can still have your posters and your Ricky Rubio jersey and still, you know, give Jeff Teague credit when he does good things. And yeah, if he's playing poorly, yeah, you can criticize him. I mean, I think that's fair. I'm sure he also knows when he's having an off night. I mean, it just happens. But I mean, I think that he definitely deserves a little more fairness and grace and definitely some credit for the way that he's performed when the team's needed him most at a very crucial time of the season.
Like I said, if he hadn't been playing this well the last 10 games since Jimmy's injury, they'd be in trouble right now. And I mean, so that's just, I mean, just got to deal with it, people. Like, I know we all love Ricky. I like Ricky Rubio. I think it's cool that the Jazz are, you know, in the playoff mix too, but
I'm glad Ricky doesn't have to sulk out his locker after losses anymore.
Yes, exactly.
Whoops. we all knew that, though.
You can find the Raised by Wolves podcast, of course, at on iTunes. You can search for us on Podcast One. And, of course, you can find us at 1500ESPN.com as well. Once again, we were brought to you by TCL, America's fastest-growing TV brand, official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. He is Derek James. I am Manny Hill. Thank you so much again for listening this week. We'll be back next week with another edition of Raised by Wolves. Until then, enjoy your Wolves basketball.